Session number 12707, Captain Frank Bruis, Reel 4.
Captain H.C.F. Bruis, Reel 4. What form did man management training take in the Army, Mr. Bruis?
Well, the basis really was you've got to get to know the men in your platoon. You're not there just to order them about. You've got to train them so that they react to your orders, but you've got to get to know them as men, get to know their about their families, where they're from, any problems that they've got. Young as many of you are, there'll be a lot of them considerably older than you. But you've got to be a sort of father figure to them. At the end of a route march, the men come first. You've got to do a foot inspection, see that any troubles are attended to, see that they get their meal first, and then you can think about yourself after that. You're in charge of them, but they come first. And if you do that, and of course it was expanded, but basically that's the nub of it. But they'll follow you through hell and high water if you're that sort of commander. If you're somebody who stands aloof from them, if you're conscious that you've got more on your shoulder than they've got on their arms, or that they've got nothing at all, that's no good. You'll finish up with a background of resentment. There's a lot more to it than that, but that's it mainly. The other lectures? All by a First World War ex-prisoner of war. How to escape if you were taken prisoner. Can't think of any other visiting lecturers.
King's regulations and army law, did that come into it anywhere?
No. Not that I can recall.
Were you advised on the kind of punishments to suit certain crimes that you may have to come across commanding men?
I've got no recollection of that side of it at all. No, I think that came, like so many other things, after one joined a unit. I keep going back to this, that a lot of it was to put you in a picture of what the men had to put up with.
Putting you through what men...
Yeah. There were other things like that about... because we hadn't swords, but we had swagger sticks, so there was particular stick drill and what have you.
What form did a stick drill take?
Oh, that it was carried in the right arm... as a rifle would be carried at the trail. And if you were approaching a senior officer, then at the halt, it was smartly brought up under the left arm and down. And pass your message, make your request, whatever it was. And then the reverse and about turning off. But they had no sympathy with with people who dropped them at all. Again, it was all the business of smartness and turnout and spit and polish.
How were you reacting to the lack of privacy, being with so many people for so long in such a small area?
If I'd gone straight from home, I think it would have been strange. But one was used to living among a crowd of bods at college, admittedly with individual study bedrooms. But you shaved and you showered and what have you all together. So that wasn't a problem, except one of the four that shared the room in the Bellevue was a piper. The heck was his name? Doesn't matter. It was lovely on a route march to have a pipe. But when he practiced on his flamen chanter in the room, that was the end. That was the only problem. Yeah, the rest of us got on pretty well. I don't know. There was a lot of horseplay. I remember once there's a big South African who was in with a crowd who always indulged in a lot of horseplay, and the end of a bayonet came through the lath and plaster wall, and then a few minutes later he comes in undoing his flies and said, "Anybody got a stick and plaster? Somebody had nicked him with a bayonet." But that went on behind the scenes. They made sure Sergeant Major, all the sergeants were well out of the way then.
Was this all horseplay? There was no bullying?
No, it was just high spirits.
Initiation ceremonies, anything like that?
No. The same bod just about fractured his skull when we were lined up outside the MI room at the barracks for a course of inoculations. And about three or four steps up. And whether it was the whiff of the ether or what it was, or whether he didn't like it, the idea of injections, but he keeled over and hit his head on the edge of one of the steps. He's a big bloke, heavy bloke. He came down a right clatter. Same fella.
Have any of the recollections of officers and sergeants?
Not particularly. We didn't see a great deal of the adjutant of the unit or of the CO. He appeared on the odd occasion, but I've got no great memory of him. They were friendly, except when somebody loosed off a blank round by mistake.
Were you being told of war stories, what the Germans would be like when you met them, this kind of thing? Was that going on?
No, not a great deal. One of the relaxations that was planned was a visit to the Royal Naval Dockyard at Rosyth. And the evening before, brilliantly sunny evening, we saw the fleet. We could see past Bass Rock from the Dunbar bit of the coast. And we saw the fleet steam out of the Forth. We weren't to know it then, but they were heading for Norway. So when we got to Rosyth, there was very little to see. The Royal Oak that Commander Prien put a torpedo in on its cap of floor. She was in dry dock. There was a submarine mothership. We went aboard one of the submarines. I was surprised to find out how many ladders where one went down, amazed at the depth below the water, and we remarked about the lack of space. And one of the Navy buds said, oh, you want to be on one of the little patrol boats. He says, this is an ocean-going mine-laying sub. Stacks of room here. And I said, well, where do you sleep? And he says, well, that's mine, on top of the torpedo tubes. So it didn't turn out as expected. But we found out later that they'd gone out. It was a magnificent sight. I don't know what the battleships were, but there were at least two capital ships and several cruisers and destroyers and the escort.
As part of your training in these early days, were you getting any experience of working with other arms of the services?
None whatsoever. We drilled with rifles. If I remember rightly, we never fired them. We weren't issued with revolvers. The first time I fired my revolver, well, it was a Smith & Wesson 38. The original ones we had were Webley? 45s. And I couldn't get my hand round to hold it straight, to get the finger inside the trigger guard, and to get any grip on the butt. It was hopeless. And I never fired a revolver till we were at Penrith, and Colonel Hasdrop organised. Really, it was a competitive pistol shoot. And that would be about 1942. But no weapon training at Octu.
How long were you at Dunbar?
19th of April, I was discharged, having served, 135 days with the colours and 65 days, how do they put it? Not with the colours, a total of 200 days.
And where did you go after that?
Then, after leave and getting outfit allowance, getting uniform made, I had to report to the Infantry Training Centre of the Durham Light Infantry at Bransworth Castle.
How much was your uniform allowance?
I've been pondering that. I could be wrong, but I think it was about £27. Something like that.
What had you to buy?
Right. Uniform, tunic, trousers, Sam Brown belt, lanyard, whistle, valise, canvas water bucket, which I've still got. What else? Swagger cane, brown boots. Khaki shirt, sock, tie, handkerchiefs. I don't think I had much change left out of it. Oh, greatcoat. Greatcoat.
Well, this is from military tailors.
Yes. There was a military tailor in Newcastle, Isaac Walton. And they were right on the ball with their adverts in the local press. In fact, I think I've got the September the 3rd or the 4th Newcastle Journal, and there are adverts for blackout material, there are adverts for military uniforms and so on. bang on right. Well, they were prepared for it before the 3rd of September. When did I go to Brandsmouth? Oh, it must have been about a fortnight afterwards. Reported to Brandsmouth Castle, and then was sent out, and I can't remember which company it was, at a little colliery village called Willington in County Durham, not far from Brandsmouth Castle, to the tender mercies of the company commander, one Captain Rathbone. It wasn't spelt with a W at the beginning, but it might well have been. He was a fiery little bod, with Mutton Jeff and one or two others up from the First World War. And I turned up on first parade wearing my forage cap as I'd worn it at Dunbar, you know, cocked over one eye. And I wasn't quick enough, but I had a good sergeant who, before I went round and did my first platoon inspection, said, "You see all the men are wearing their forage caps, sir?" And I nearly said, "Well, they look a right set of Charlies with it slap bang straight in the middle." But I saw what he was getting at, and I got myself properly dressed. That was my introduction to the way the light infantry wore their field service caps.
So you went to Willington, and you were allotted a platoon, were you?
No. Not immediately. I talk about carrying out an inspection, because it happened to be, that wasn't necessarily the first morning, but it was early on, and it was probably because I was the duty officer.
How were you received at Willington?
Well, we had to report to the company commander, first of all, and he was a fiery little bod, but we had to be allotted billets. I was billeted with the local dentist and told where the mess was and what time meals would be and so on, just the general ordinary everyday routine details passed on. It was in one of the downstairs rooms of the Market Hotel in Willington. And we stood in as spectators when he issued his daily orders, when he dealt with offenders in the company office. Taken round with officers who were already there, instructed in the duties of being orderly officer, inspection of barracks, inspection of at meal times, just general sort of routine. It was a gradual breaking in process, but it didn't last long there, because sent on embarkation leave, and I think that would be 48 or 72 hours, something like that.
Do you know about what time of the year that was?
Yes, it was immediately before we were going off on the 21st of May. So it was 19th of April out of Dunbar, never having fired a revolver, off to France on the 21st of May, travelling down to King's Cross on the 21st. We had to make our own arrangements about where we would find our own accommodation in London, and leaving from Waterloo to go to Southampton, details of the transport that the draft was going on. The serial number of the draft was RMISA, sailing from Southampton in block QS22.
Where were you going? What were you doing?
Reinforcements. It was a train load of officer reinforcements. I joined it at Durham. The train was two-thirds full then, from further north, probably mainly from Scotland, I should imagine. Train timings there, leaving Durham at 12:36, getting into King's Cross at 7 o'clock in the evening. And that was as far as we got. Reported to the RTO at King's Cross and were told not to leave the vicinity of the station. Make do with what we could at the King's Cross Railway Buffet. And to report back in, what was it, half an hour or an hour? Nothing more at first. But later on, when we did report back, we gathered that the harbour at Boulogne, where we were going from Southampton, had been heavily bombed. And found out later, of course, that the German left hook had either reached the coast or wasn't very far off, doing that big encircling move. But it went on for, oh, about two and a half hours. You're going, you're not going. You're going, you're not going. Eventually, I should think about 8:30 or 9 o'clock. Report back such and such an hour, round about midnight or something like that, back off north to your units. One of the bods on this draft was a Londoner. His wife was with him on the platform. You're going down in the dumps. You're not going over the moon, alternately, for about 2.5 hours. Well, can't remember where we ate, and I know where we went to have a drink, to have several drinks, was the Strand Palace Hotel. Got on the train sometime after midnight, gasping for something to drink. And although it said in the little place at the end of the corridor, not drinking water, it was on that occasion, and landed back to Brantsbeth, rather part-worn, to be christened rather scathingly, "Oh, here come the King's Cross Warriors." And that was it. And it couldn't have been long afterwards that several of us were posted to West Hartlepool, to what was then the 50th Holding Battalion. Holding Battalion was one, was a unit which took in recruits who'd finished their initial training at the Infantry Training Centre to hold them, continue training, until they were posted to a field unit.
So how long were you at the Infantry Training Centre after you came back from London?
A matter of days.
You were still in Brantsbeth? You didn't move to any other place?
No, at Willington, and we were called in to Brantsbeth by the adjutant John Lister Todd, whom I've met quite recently at reunions, that we would be posted to West Hartlepool. It was a mixed unit. There was one company of the Border Regiment. And if my memory serves me right, three companies of Durham's. I was posted to D Company. I've got a feeling that the CO there was a Scot. I must have met him. I know I had to go and see him on some other occasion, whether it was for some misdemeanour or not, at the requisition house that was the regiment's, the battalion headquarters in West Hartlepool, and the RSM, who was standing at the doorway of this house, and he recommended to me in no uncertain terms that I didn't go in to see the CO like that, sir. And I wondered what he was getting at. Better to remove the bicycle clip, sir. And guard mounting outside the Grand Hotel. I was soon introduced to that. That was a bit of an ordeal, because one wasn't given the opportunity of watching it performed beforehand. And all the public turned out, because there were guards on requisition school, requisition buildings, roving pickets. And, however, one got used to it eventually. We were billeted in a place called Tunstall Court. I think it had probably been occupied as a billet in the First World War, and I think it must have been knocked about so much that it was never occupied again till the Second War. It had belonged to the Ropner family, who were in shipbuilding in the area. I found out later that one of the Ropners had been a lieutenant colonel in the old Durham Volunteers.
What was the accommodation like in this court?
Very basic. I don't know how long this 50th Holding Battalion had been in existence. Couldn't have been all that long. So the place was still being spring cleaned as best as possible. There were a number of large rooms, and the troops' accommodation, palliasses on the floors. There were no beds. And I was put onto some ghastly job early on. And it wasn't that I was given a squad of men to do it. I was checking up on ammunition stocks, and some of the boxes had somehow been broken, and there was a lot of the ammunition loose. And it was drilled into me that I had to make a proper physical check of the amount of ammunition. And it was a heck of a job counting all this loose stuff and putting it into clips and packing the boxes. I was on that for days.
Were you on your own?
I don't think it was a punishment for anything. I can't remember that I'd blotted my copybook to that great extent.
And was this a full-time job for those days?
It was. It seemed a long time. It was probably less than a week. Yeah. One of the chaps there had been at Willington. He was a black button job at 6th Battalion, Bishop Auckland. And when I got to West Hartlepool, he was there as well. And the company commander, he was ex-6th Battalion.
What was his name?
Jack Lawson, Major Lawson, landlord of the Market Hotel, Bishop Auckland. A very unsoldierly-looking officer of a rather magnificent girth. And believe it or not, having reported to him in the late afternoon and had some tea, the mess was a requisitioned house called Jesmond House, the west side of West Hartlepool. We were then all ordered to turn out and go play bowls with him in the adjacent park. There was another officer who was very difficult to get on with. He'd seen too much service in bad stations. He'd been attached to the, the King's West African Rifles or something. Tommy Forrester. difficult to get on with. Very sharp, quick-tempered fellow. And I had my first proper batman there, who was a regular, Private Loughran from the 2nd Battalion, I think.
And what were his duties as an officer's batman?
Well, he doubled up as a, as an officer's mess waiter, and saw that he not only wakened you with a cup of strong tea in the morning, but saw that you actually got your feet on the floor and didn't go back to sleep again, because there was no mercy from old Jack Lowson if anybody turned up late on parade. The company at that stage was a skeleton company. We had probably seven, I think, officers altogether. And then about June, there were quite a lot of Durham chaps and Northumberland, but quite a large contingent from the South Wing, a lot of them Cockneys, Londoners. And, of course, they came in their navy blue suits, and we had to start with them from scratch. It was no longer a holding battalion as it had been, that is, holding trained recruits till they could be posted here, there, and everywhere within the regiment.